Did you hear about Ryan Benoit?
No.
Like, is he the UFC fighter?
Yeah.
Okay, trying to cut weight, and he could barely stand at the weigh-in.
Oh, he must have been drunk.
No, he was cutting weight. Oh. And I've seen this happen, you know, like in high school wrestling. Really? I'm actually kind of glad that they have the rules that they do now.
Right.
You can only cut so much weight. But he could barely stand. And UFC thought that he was sick enough that they canceled the fight.
Wow.
Even though he made weight. Hello, Boston Matt. Even though he made weight, they canceled the fight. Now, you know what? I'm actually going to say thank you.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of sports organizations that don't put the players first. And the UFC said, you know what? We're not going to take a chance. We're not going to take a chance on somebody getting hurt or sick or something like that.
Right.
And UFC continues to amaze me. How about you?
Me too. They're more professional than most of the sports.
They are. They are.
About handling things on an administrative thing.
129 great pounds.
Great ownership of UFC.
It is. And, you know, it's something for us to celebrate because over and over and over and over again.
Americana.
Right. Okay, I'll give you an example. In football, you got a little bit of a tear.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got a bad sprain, bone on bone. Here, just let me give you a shot. Just go ahead and play through it. You won't feel, you know what I mean?
Especially if you're a lineman.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just give me your fingers, give me your ankles, give me whatever you got.
Let's just numb it real quick and you get back out there.
We'll deal with it afterwards.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, I'm kind of impressed with the UFC.
It's just like the old football movie. Remember the high school team? Yeah. Was it Friday Night Lights?
Yeah, that was a good show.
Yeah.
That was real good. Let me ask you something. You remember the show we did the other day where we did the upcoming and new sports?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what was on there? UFC and esports.
Pickleball.
Yeah. Okay. So you do remember that.
And what's weird, I heard more about pickleball over the week.
Really? What'd you hear?
I was watching the Storage Wars, like the show on Hulu.
Right.
Because they were showing the new season, 21, which is unbelievable. The show's been on 21 years.
Has it been on 21 years?
It's unbelievable. Wow. But it's one of the new shows, and the guy finds a pickleball. We never heard of it either.
Okay.
He takes it to go get it looked at, of course. You know how they do on the show.
Right.
And he comes to find out it ain't worth what he thought it was going to be worth, of course.
So who's your favorite actor on that show?
Favorite. I know, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, well, Barry's kind of cool.
Barry was the coolest.
Yeah,
I don't know why he's not on there no more, but.
I think acting got old.
I know.
Well, anyways, you know, I was thinking about esports and things from times past. Hello, Craig Holmes. I look at esports and I think that esports kind of suck, okay? But check this out. Did you know that at one time in history we had telegraph sports? Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Okay, practically as soon as the telegraph enabled instantaneous communication over hundreds of miles, local sports clubs in several major cities began using it to organize competitions with clubs in other states. For years, citizens could see scores posted in their local newspapers for the most recent telegraph sports matches. The idea appears to have originated with bowling clubs and soon caught on, spreading to other sports. A 1905 issue of Shooting and Fishing magazine reported on the result of a telegraph shooting match between the Washington, D.C. Revolver Association and Smith & Wesson Revolver Club of Springfield, Massachusetts. Telegraph bowling leagues in particular were very popular in the first two decades of the 20th century, but largely died down by the 20s.
Wow.
I mean, it's kind of cool, right? Because, you know, we've got esports today where people are playing across the world now. But, you know, back in the day when telegraphs were around, they were playing these and had to get the information out right away.
That's probably, yeah, I mean, that's the only way they had of getting it out.
Dave Maynard said, so we have proof that nerds have always been around. I would say that's probably a truth.
Truth.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean.
An applause.
Exactly. Yeah. How about this? Wax bullet dueling. Would you go dueling with wax bullets?
Sure.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh, that would hurt like hell.
It would.
Dueling with pistols was still a popular, if prideful and lethal pastime in America in the early 1900s. especially in the South. Taking up arms over petty slights was still seen as a way to potentially alleviate one's social status, and refusing a challenge duel could make one a social pariah. But for a brief time, dueling became a spectator sport. Participants faced off wearing black robes and face masks and used wax bullets. The sport originated in France with a school of dueling being established in Paris. Wax bullet dueling was eventually featured in the 1908 Summer Olympics. Now, wow. Isn't that cool? Have you ever heard of dueling being done in the Olympics?
That would be awesome. Why can't we bring this back?
Hey, start a petition.
There we go.
Hey, change.org. Change.org.
Hey, bring something old, make it new again.
Absolutely. I mean, you know.
I would like that as an Olympic sport.
Hello, Kim. Well, that'd be cool. Wax bullet dueling. Imagine all the people.
Yeah.
Imagine all the people. Right. You know what I'm saying? Living life. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, you could get rid of some of the problems. Like, how about this? Instead of Joe Biden taking Donald Trump behind the woodshed, behind the school gym, remember? Maybe they could just do a wax bullet.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Or it could be like representing the USA, red, against the Poland. Well, we won't pick on Poland.
Okay, how about this one? Staged train crashes. You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like a banker's game.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, just imagine how much it was for a train back then. I mean, look at how much it is for a train today.
Right.
It says, humans have always been suckers for spectacle. From the Roman Colosseum to the latest Marvel film in IMAX 3D. But in years past, spectacle could be hard to come by without putting yourself in danger. Enter head on. Joe Conley, perhaps the most famous promoter of the biggest events of their day, staged head-on crashes between two locomotives. Between 1896 and 1932, Conley staged no less than 73 train crashes. Have you ever even heard about this?
No.
Me neither. But I would have. I wonder if there's some old video laying around of these trains smashing into each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had silent films in the 1930s.
Right.
So you would think with something like this, something that awesome, over 40,000 spectators showed up to watch. But the impact caused both trains and boilers to explode, sending flaming debris raining down on the crowd. And at least three people died and many more were injured. Well, three people, I mean, you can look at it this way. You could go watch a train crash or you could go watch, you know, that one group operate.
Yeah. And
burn down America, you know.
Yeah.
10 times more people died from that in one summer.
Yeah, I believe it.
You know what I'm saying?
So we got proof of that.
Yeah, I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Hello, Murphy's Law. Bed pushing.
I've heard of that.
You've heard? Okay, so you've never heard of trains crashing?
No.
But you've heard of bed pushing?
Yeah.
Really? Wow. Okay, well, the University of Rhodesia, which was, it is now, but Zimbabwe, started to craze, and it was pushing full-size beds mounted on wheels over long distances and difficult terrain. Canadian students from Nova Scotia to British Columbia could be seen pushing beds anywhere and everywhere over highways, prairies, and frozen lakes. At the time, the record for distance was an incredible 1,600 kilometers or 1,000 miles, set by an Ontario University team that kept its Simmons rolling night and day for a week. Simmons Beauty Rest. Think about that. Their bed.
We could have a sponsor for an Olympic sport, like you just said.
We could. We could bring in MyPillow for the bed pushing.
Yeah. We could bring in the MyPillow guys.
Yeah, speaking of MyPillow, if you want a MyPillow, and if you want to try to beat the Simmons bed record of 1,000 miles, pushing
and you need bed sheets and pillowcases,
yeah, and pillows.
I think pillows.
Yeah,
go on over to MyPillow.
Yeah, MyPillow.com.
Yeah,
use promo code Crankers.
Crankers.
Yeah, get up to 66% off, and you can join in the fun.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
I would join in on that. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean that's weird.
Once I got the MyPillow on there, it'd be good.
How about trucking?
What is that?
Okay. The phrase keep on trucking.
Oh, keep on trucking.
Yeah. Originated with a Blind Boy Fuller blues song in the 30s, but right. seemed to really catch on in the 70s when it seemed to appear on every other shirt practically overnight.
Right.
It appears to simply be an innocent way to express that one should keep going no matter how difficult things become. But American college students, with some inspiration from artist Robert Crumb, turned the phrase into a strange and pointless activity. Crumb's comic strip, Keep on Truckin', featured characters of men walking with a pronounced exaggerated strut, leaning back while making wide, swooping leg motions. College kids, these strips' target audience, took this immediately to heart and began copying the cartoonist walk in real life. The phenomenon was first documented in campus newspapers in 1970, but died out by the mid-70s. Perhaps this was because Crumb was finally granted a copyright for his original image, used without licenses on merchandise until 1977.
Wow.
Yeah. So maybe that one song, she's got the strut.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what it was?
Could be.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's got the strut was the female version of Keep on Trucking.
Right. I think so.
You know? Huh? How about this one? This one really intrigues me. In the 20s, X-rays were a strange and wonderful invention with a futuristic name. Scientists could hardly conceive the potential. They also could hardly conceive the potential dangers. This explains why during that decade, X-ray shoe fitting machines became the rage in shoe stores across America. Though they contained radioactive material with no protection in place to keep this radiation from leaking into the atmosphere.
I wonder if they had a sweatshop X-ray.
Nike came out with that later.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. they were called shoe-fitting fluoroscopes, and kids and adults alike loved them. By the early 50s, there were over 10,000 extremely hazardous radioactive devices in department stores throughout the land. They were banned in the 70s once the dangers became known, and while a few scattered cases of foot cancer in older patients have been linked to the machines, exactly how many may have gotten sick, we will never know. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, have you ever heard of that?
No.
You know, when it comes to that or when it comes to the radium girls, you know, where just, you know, point the brush, meaning
right.
take your paintbrush and point it so you can get really fine drawings. Just use your lips, you know, right. and then. Well, we didn't know there was a problem. We're sorry. You know, girls' jaws are dropping off their face, you know.
Right.
And then during that same time period, they have radioactive foot measures that, you know, you just go in there and stick your foot in and it x-rays your foot to tell you how you can have the perfect shoe. But they were new technology, so they were really cool. So people would go and do that as an activity, as a pastime.
Wow.
Did your family ever do any weird pastimes?
No, not really.
No, none?
No.
What are you saying? You're better than everybody else?
Yeah. No, I just never.
Okay, balloon jumping.
Right. I stuck my foot in my mouth on that last.
Yes, you did. You know, it's okay.
Need an x-ray.
God will forgive you.
I need an x-ray machine.
for the head. Yeah. Yes, the 1920s loved futurism, and nothing was more futuristic than flight. Science fiction of the time was packed with flying cars and bizarre air spaceships, and some rich sportsmen thought of a new way to bring the future into the present, balloon jumping. The jumper was attached by a harness to a large balloon, large enough to provide some lift, but not so large that the jumper would drift into the sky. Participants could achieve a kind of moonwalk-type bounce, flying up over trees, fences, and even houses. Sports publications throughout the 20s fawned over the new sport, calling it safe, easy, and fun, but it never quite caught on among the public at large, perhaps due to the 1927 balloon jumping death in the UK, in which an experienced parachute jumper died while partaking in the activity. I'm telling you right now, they need to bring this back.
Bring it back.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Balloon jumping.
Yeah.
I would be in seventh. If I could start running and jumping
yeah.
over a tree,
Yeah.
If I could jump over a house,